Hey guys, welcome back to Defining Truth Podcast. This is episode 50, and we have a lot to talk about, from Ukraine and recent conversations in the White House to a joint address, which got a little spicy. All right, well, welcome back to the Defining Truth Podcast, episode 50, man. That's a big one. It's like a special anniversary.
Big milestone.
Hey, well, if you missed it this week, there was a lot going on. So we're going to get into two topics. Going to be a little bit of a short podcast this week. We're going to talk about Ukraine and recent conversation Trump had with Zelensky in the Oval Office, which I don't know if they were in the Oval Office. Were they in that office?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
And it kind of disintegrated into Zelensky being really offensive towards the U.S. in general. And then later he backtracked and issued somewhat of an apology. But a lot of sort of random emotional outrage from those on the left, blinded oftentimes by their hatred for conservatives or Trump or whatever. So we want to give you a little background leading up to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And again, we're just going to present some facts to give you context and less emotions, which is the appropriate way to view things. And then we're going to jump into Trump's address. What was it? Yesterday, right?
Two nights ago now.
And that was fun. And we'll get into that in a minute. Powerful, powerful speech. Hard to argue with. And now polls showing that the majority of America agrees with it and supports it, which again leaves Democrats in a really awkward position. But let's kick it over to you, Brandon. Let's go into the background in the Russia invasion of Ukraine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to piggyback off what you said, because I think it's really important when we're dealing with, sort of, if you watch the whole video, the whole interaction between Zelensky, Trump, and Pence, it's easy to have an opinion about something that you see over the course of 10 minutes. I think the point in going back to, we're going to go back as far as February of 2014, is in order to have a fact-based opinion about something, you have to be read in or well-versed on the history of it. This issue between Russia and Ukraine, in the context of what we're talking about now, you know, dates back over a decade, three different presidents across four presidencies. So when you see a 10-minute interaction in the Oval Office, it might seem as if maybe Trump and Vance were being hard or aggressive or unfair to Zelensky. But I think once you go through the background and kind of get the whole picture, it might make a little bit more sense. So let's go back to 2014 and the annexation of Crimea and the Donbass conflict. So in February of 2014, Russia annexed Crimea following Ukraine's pro-Western revolution, which removed at the time, the pro-Russian president, Viktor Yanukovych. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And then around the same time, Russian-backed separatists launched an armed rebellion in the Donbass region, which led to a year-long conflict there. So what was Obama's response? He was president at the time. Many argue that Obama's failure to enforce the red lines in Syria, which Russia supported Bashar al-Assad, signaled to Vladimir Putin that the U.S. would not take serious action in Ukraine. Makes sense. So what does Putin do? He tested the limits by annexing Crimea in 2014. He supported separatists in the Donbass with weapons, training, financial aid, ignored U.S. sanctions, which critics say were too weak to deter Russian aggression anyways. Obama's approach, he really relied heavily on diplomacy, economic sanctions, avoiding military confrontation, ultimately failed to prevent further Russian expansion.
It didn't do anything, basically.
No. So there was a military aid shift under both Trump and Biden. The Obama administration provided only non-lethal aid to Ukraine. But Trump, from 2017 to 2021, his first term, and then Biden from 2022 on, they both approved lethal military aid, including Javelin anti-tank missiles, proving that Obama's reluctance was unnecessarily and harmful to international security and certainly to the security of Ukraine. So what were Putin's actions during Trump's first term, how did they differ from Obama's? Despite maintaining aggression in the Donbas, Putin avoided full-scale war. Key Russian actions under Trump, he continued to support continued the support for separatists in eastern Ukraine. He simplified the Russian citizenship process for people living in the occupied Donbas, increasing Russia's influence in the region. He did negotiate in peace talks, though most talks did result in stalemates. And then he deployed troops near Ukraine's border in 2018 and again in 2020 as a show of force. And then, of course, he expanded the Nord Stream 2 pipeline construction, which was ultimately blocked by Trump. The project was blocked by Trump with sanctions. So to say, kind of sum up all of that, Putin did not escalate to a full-scale war during Trump's presidency, unlike in 2014 with Obama and then 2022 and Biden. That begs the question, why? I think we'll get there.
Yeah.
So Ukraine's shift towards NATO and the West. So after 2014, Ukraine strengthened ties with NATO and the European Union. And in 2021, now President Zelensky pushed for NATO membership, which Russia strongly opposed.
Of course.
A lot of people think, well, why would Russia strongly oppose that? I tend to think that it would be the same if Russia tried to come to Mexico and put military bases, Russian military bases, at our southern border. The United States would have an issue with that. I don't think that that's supporting Russia and Putin or being a sympathizer. I think that's just the facts from his perspective. So Biden's response to NATO membership was that he gave no clear answer on whether he supported Ukraine's immediate NATO entry. And his non-committal response left Ukraine in a gray zone, which potentially emboldened Putin to act. Critics argue that Biden's ambiguity contributed to Russia's decision to invade in 2022. They saw Biden as weak on the issue. Now, Trump's approach to the war has evolved over time. During his first term, Trump provided military aid to Ukraine, marking a departure from Obama's limited assistance. And now in his second term, his strategy has shifted towards negotiations with Russia, prioritizing an expedited end to the conflict, even if it requires Ukrainian concessions. He's calling this the end to the forever war. Now, while Trump's second-term strategizing of prioritizing negotiations may appear favorable to Russia, like in the instance of the Oval Office blow-up, his overall track record shows a consistent stance against Russian aggression through sanctions, military aid to Ukraine, and opposition to Russian energy dominance. By the way, I forgot to mention, the Nord 2 stream pipeline that he stopped with sanctions was eventually built under the Biden administration. So that has been,
of course, it was
fulfilled. Yeah. So in contrast to all of this history, Obama's policies failed to deter Russia's advances, while Biden's inconsistent approach in 2021 may have directly contributed to Putin's decision to launch a full-scale invasion in 2022. So now that brings us to February 28th of 2025, where Zelensky comes to meet with President Trump and Vice President Vance in the Oval Office. President Donald Trump's handling of his recent meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky reflects a significant realignment of U.S. foreign policy. He is moving away from the open-ended, unconditional support that characterized previous administrations, and instead, Trump has shifted to a hard-nosed, negotiation-based approach, making it clear that Ukraine's future depends on reaching a deal, not on indefinite U.S. aid. For years, Zelensky has overplayed his hand, assuming that the West, particularly in this case the United States, would continue providing limitless military and financial assistance, because that was kind of the MO in the Biden administration. We were sending billions of dollars to Ukraine. Yep. That even Zelensky has admitted they don't know where half of it went. The United States continuing providing limitless military and financial assistance. However, no country in NATO or Europe or otherwise has been willing to come to Ukraine's aid to the degree necessary to win the war outright. Trump's message to Zelensky was clear, that there would be no U.S. troops on the ground. That seems to be a hard line for the president, and that there would be no blank check moving forward. Zelensky, failing to adjust to his new reality, walked away from the meeting with absolutely nothing, his tail between his legs, and no new aid commitments, no military escalation, and no pathway for a Ukrainian total victory. In doing so, he marginalized himself failing to recognize that he is not indispensable to Ukraine's future, but U.S. support is. Trump's stance is not about abandoning Ukraine, but about forcing a realistic conclusion to this forever war. The war, in Trump's opinion, cannot continue indefinitely, and Ukraine must negotiate from a position of reality rather than fantasy. A deal will be made either by Zelensky or his replacement. If Zelensky refuses to accept that, Ukraine's leadership may shift towards someone who will. And Zelensky's inability to sort of recognize the limits of Western support has now boxed him in, and Trump's refusal to indulge him in any further sent a clear message that the time of endless war is over. Now, critics argue that Trump's hard stance towards Zelensky played into Russia's hands, but that's just a misreading of the situation. Russia's not celebrating in this moment. Any short-term advantage that they may perceive will quickly evaporate as they realize Trump's real objective, which is twofold: ending the war on terms that prevent further Russia aggression, and then restructuring Western alliances in a way that leaves Europe, not the U.S., carrying the burden of security in its own backyard. So unlike Biden's passive approach, which has allowed Putin to dictate the pace of this war, Trump is asserting control over the outcome. That's not pro-Russia. That's ensuring America, not Moscow, sets the terms of the future geopolitical order. One of the most significant geopolitical consequences of Trump's stance is that Europe is now forced to confront the reality of its own security responsibilities, which they have not done in the past. For years, NATO countries have relied heavily on the U.S. to provide military and financial support while failing to meet their own defense obligations. And Trump's position now makes it clear that the days of Europe's dependence on American defense is coming to an end. So European leaders now must recognize that they, not the U.S., will bear the greatest responsibility for containing Russian aggression moving forward. This shift now realigns U.S. foreign policy with long-term strategic interests, limiting America's role in a costly foreign conflict while ensuring that Europe steps up as a true partner in global security. So the conclusion to all of this is Trump's move was a strategic, not emotional approach. Trump's handling of the Zelensky meeting was not about abandoning Ukraine, and it wasn't. It was more about forcing a realistic, strategic reassessment of the war's trajectory. Zelensky overplayed his hand and left with nothing, and failed to realize that the U.S. is essential to Ukraine's survival, but that he is not essential to Ukraine's future. A deal will happen with or without Zelensky. Russia is not celebrating. They now understand that Trump will dictate the terms of the post-war order, and Europe is being forced to step up, realizing it can no longer depend on the U.S. to indefinitely shield it from Russia aggression. This is not a weakness. This is called leadership. Instead of continuing an unsustainable war strategy, Trump is taking the first steps toward a controlled resolution, one that ensures America's role as a strategic power broker, not a blank check benefactor.
Yeah, I think a powerful takeaway from this is Trump's and his administration's consistency, because really what he is telling Zelensky here in this meeting is no different than what he's doing right now all across the United States. They're holding government leadership and bureaucracies accountable. And if he's willing to do it with our own people and our own government, why in the world would we not do it with foreign governments who are receiving billions in U.S. taxpayer dollars? I mean, that's the bottom line it comes down to. I think right now, Democrats and those on the left are some of the most pitiable people in the country, because they must feel so duped or foolish for what they have followed and accepted as reality for years and years and years, when in reality it's everything they believed was a lie. I mean, it's starting to look now, based on what has been revealed, that almost everything the Democrats have done was for the purpose of profit. They're profiteering off the backs of certainly American citizens, but also other people around the world. I mean, it's not a light thing to brush over, that what you mentioned before about, billions of dollars unaccounted for. Don't you see a pattern here? Like,
yeah, we're dealing with the same thing in our country.
With the same thing here, right? State of California can't find $24 billion. And it's, whoopsie, $24 billion just magically disappeared. You know, same thing, Ukraine. We don't know where it went. And now we're seeing that, you know, through the diligent and heroic efforts of Doge, we're finding hundreds of millions, billions with a B now, of dollars unaccounted for and wasted. I just read today, they discovered a bunch of nonprofits controlled by the Democrats that received billions of dollars who had just only formulated a few months before receiving that money. Empty warehouses were discovered, receiving hundreds of millions of dollars. Empty warehouses. So again, this is consistency. This administration is doing exactly what the American people have ordered it to do. It is, as we'll get into later, a true mandate from the American people, and I think even the Democrats agree with that. There has been a mandate issued. The American people have spoken, and the administration just happens to be the people right now holding the tool, and they're holding leadership accountable. The amount of waste, fraud, and abuse that's been discovered is utterly staggering. So again, you know, it's pretty ignorant to walk away from looking at that conversation with Zelensky and to think that there was anything wrong or that it was weak, because here's the truth is that Zelensky was he's the Joe Biden of, you know, Ukraine. He is as far left as you could possibly imagine. That's why he spent time in Pennsylvania. He campaigned for Biden.
Yeah.
Of course he did, right?
Yeah. Well, and anybody that knows anything about how they were not there was not real negotiations going on in the Oval Office. All of that stuff happens behind closed doors. Yeah. They negotiate, they iron everything out, and then they come into the Oval Office and they kind of do the dance and pony show where it's like, okay, you know, here's the agreement we came to. Zelensky tried to go off the script in this. He tried to I forget the way that Trump or Vance put it, but he basically tried to litigate the issue in front of the American people, which is not his place.
Trump said, you don't hold the cards.
Yeah. You don't hold the cards. You're not allowed to dictate to us in our country what's going on. And one other thing I wanted to mention too, just because I know that we've spent time in the past talking about, like, we're not isolationists. I want to be clear. Trump's approach is not, has a little bit of isolationism in it, but it's not fully non-interventionalist. Nobody is advocating, including Trump, for a full withdrawal from global affairs, right? The argument is that it's supporting leveraging U.S. influence in negotiations and maintaining America's new leadership role.
It's all action and less talk. And the left traditionally has been the opposite. They're all talk and zero action. I mean, literally, they say all the words that tantalize the left's ears, right? They use the right terms and they don't offend. And yet, in reality, absolutely nothing gets done. They don't do anything. The war does not end. In fact, more wars start. Billions of dollars are wasted. Yeah, it's out of control. I wonder, you know, we've talked extensively too about how compromised the Biden administration was, and now obviously as this is being exposed, we're seeing why. A compromise is, you know, always tied to money. You follow the money is how you solve the mystery, right? And we've covered extensively how the Biden administration was completely infiltrated by Chinese Communist Party members. And then we talked about Ukraine. You remember the Hunter Biden laptop revealed a ton of compromise and shady deals going on in Ukraine. So of course there's people upset because their free paycheck is coming to an end.
Did you know that Ukraine is one of, I forget who rates it, but there's a organization that rates corrupt countries, and they're like one of the top corrupt countries on this list. I mean, sure. I equate his reaction, like, this is what happens when like a Nepo baby's like credit card gets turned off. Like, he's upset because like daddy's not giving him any more money.
Yeah.
Is his reaction. That's why he's acting like a child.
You're 100% correct. They could have stopped the conversation right there at where's the money? That's the only question Trump or Vance needed to ask him is, where is the money that the American people sent you? If you in that instant cannot provide an exact account for, and your response is, you know, much to our horror, we don't know, you're done. That's absolutely ridiculous, because what you're asking for is an indefinite perpetuating
blank check
of a conflict and more money. Until when? What's your path to victory? See, there was obviously, and we talked about this offline, obviously there was some context there that we missed from the meeting between Trump, Vance, and Zelensky before they got on camera, because he was already hot coming into that. You could see Zelensky was really sassy and offensive and rolling his
probably
eyes.
Because Trump told him it was nice of him to dress up when he got there, which was funny, but...
Yeah, well, it was pretty apparent by how quick, especially Vance, you know, popped off at calling him out. You could tell that there was more context there because it didn't come from just that one comment. They obviously had a conversation and did not like Zelensky's response. Even the, you know, some of the comments were pretty deep, like when J.D. Vance tells him, how about a thank you?
Yeah.
Right. So there's a conversation prior that we weren't privy to where he was obviously ungrateful, you know, and you want to talk about like, you know, I hear some, I mean, it's really kind of far left crazies at this point, but there's people far left. They're like, oh, Trump, they're still on the Trump Russia thing. Like Trump is no friend of Russia. He gave Ukraine millions of dollars and Javelin missiles to kill Russians. We're not friendly. We're just realistic. And that's the difference between the Democrats and what this administration is doing now is they were all talk and all show. And it was all, as we see now, for the purpose of profiteering. They were making millions, billions of dollars.
Now, anybody who can't connect the dots that Russia invaded during the Obama administration, then basically did a bunch of nothing during Trump's administration, except for sending troops to the border as a show of force. And then invaded again during the Biden administration. I'm like, you can't connect the dots there. Like, it could not be more obvious.
I know. It's pretty bad. That's why I say, like, those on the left right now are some of the most pitiable people, because we have so much history now. This goes way back as far as the behavior from those on the left. I mean, you can go all the way back to Benghazi and Hillary Clinton, and they have this strange, I mean, really, our opinion is it's rooted in a deep hatred for America and Christian Judaic values. That's, you know, really deep. But it manifests itself in things like this, where you're weak and our enemies abroad take advantage. They love, absolutely love when Democrats are in charge, because that is when they make the most money. They can invade the most countries, start the most wars, and they're able to completely take advantage of the United States under such weak, sort of self-hating administrations. Yeah, I mean, look at Benghazi, right? Same pattern of behavior where you think that your weird, like, liberal approach to geopolitics is working. Arab Spring was an absolute disaster. And then they always have the same pattern. It's like they blame America somehow, right? Like, you have murderous terrorists that push in on the annex there in Benghazi and murder the U.S. ambassador and several others. And then what is Hillary Clinton's response? The Democrats' response was to blame an American in San Diego because he made a YouTube video offending the Prophet Muhammad. And they actually ran with that and completely lied about all of the intelligence warnings and security threat warnings that they received, saying, hey, this isn't a good idea. And they just wanted to press ahead with their agenda because it aligned with their political objective of getting reelected. You see the same thing you mentioned briefly with the red line in Syria. Same thing, right? Obama's just all talk and nobody respected that. And so red lines were crossed all the time. Syria devolved into a multi-year civil war conflict, which led to thousands and thousands dead. Actually, just now, before we started, I see that things are erupting in Syria right now. They're going into civil war too, with multiple fronts. You have the Druze, you have the Western Front, you have former Islamists, and then you have ex-regime forces that are now fighting. I mean, it's completely devolving into chaos there. And so you have this sort of pattern, right, where Democrats get up and pontificate. It's all emotions. It's like, we're just going to just turn that faucet on and just give hundreds and hundreds of millions and millions and millions. But it always seems to benefit other people and not American citizens. And I think that's the difference this administration is taking. I think, as you know, I'm definitely not an isolationist. I believe we should be heavily involved in global affairs because that's how you best get ahead of protecting the United States. But the caveat is you have to do it correctly.
Yeah.
The Democrats' version of helping other people is waste, fraud, and abuse. It's make them rich, make billions of dollars disappear or you're a bad person.
And it's amazing to me that the Democrats, I mean, are what is their solution to the problem? Are they advocating for U.S. troops to be put on the ground? Like, what is their solution? Because I thought they were the anti-war party, and now they're the ones that are pushing, basically for an all-out war. Trump is trying to avoid that conflict because, trust me, anybody who thinks that Trump, like, won't put U.S. troops on the ground somewhere if it's absolutely necessary, like, has a far misread on Trump. He doesn't want to go there, but he will do that if it means protecting U.S. lives. I mean, it's just, it's amazing to me that we've come to this.
Well, the Democrats have done the exact opposite. I mean, the most recent and worst example is the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, where you didn't even have much of a conflict going on. There was very low casualty rates, if any, on an annual basis. For the first time ever in the lives of many young Afghans, they had true liberty. Women were able to go to school. That in of itself was a huge deal. We were building schools and creating partnerships there. 20 years of an American presence had led to many Afghans believing that maybe democracy was actually possible. And then here comes Joe Biden. And due to his manipulation by the Chinese Communist Party, that's my opinion, and their compromise there, it's all about money. He just abandoned all of our allies, leading to deep, deep effects like the resurgence of Al-Qaeda and ISIS and the proliferation of weapons and terrorism all throughout the world, because you just created a terrorist state without a true government. The Taliban is not ridiculous that we even call them a government. Again, you have another example of emotional, like you say the right things with your words, right? And people like, oh yeah, we love people. And yet your actions destroy lives, like actually kill people, versus maybe you have a more realistic or hard approach. I mean, you know what this is? This is a classic like parent child conversation, yeah. Right? Where it's like, mommy, I want ice cream every day, all day. And if you love me, you'll give me my ice cream, right? But the truth is that when you love your child, you have to tell them sometimes, no, you can't have ice cream all the time. You need nutrients. You need good food. You know, a little ice cream sometimes is okay. The left's whole play is, if you can take that analogy, is to say, if you don't give me exactly what I want and say the things that I want to hear, you don't love me. And you must be supporting Russia. It's just so crazy and immature. I think it's a perfect segue, though, into the next display of immaturity, because really it's hand in hand, right? I mean, you want to know why the world is such a disaster under liberal policies and Democrats? Well, just take a look at this.
The golden age of America has only just begun.
Members are directed to uphold and maintain decorum in the House and to cease any further disruptions. That's your warning. Mr. Green, take your seat. Take your seat, sir. Take your seat. Finding that members continue to engage in willful and concerted disruption of proper decorum, the chair now directs the sergeant at arms to restore order. Remove this gentleman from the chamber.
I created the brand new Department of Government Efficiency. GOGE. Perhaps you've heard of it. Perhaps. He didn't need this. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Everybody here, even this side, appreciates it, I believe. They just don't want to admit that. Since taking office, my administration has launched the most sweeping border and immigration crackdown in American history. And we quickly achieved the lowest numbers of illegal border crossers ever recorded. Thank you. The media and our friends in the Democrat Party kept saying we needed new legislation. We must have legislation to secure the border. But it turned out that all we really needed was a new president.
Trump, 2 days ago addresses, Congress, the House, and this State of the Union / joint House address. And it is just quite a display of two things simultaneously. America's back, baby. That is unquestionable. I mean, it was just hard fact after hard fact about how great this administration has done in its initial few months of existence. And then simultaneously, you got this petulant, spoiled sort of brat approach from the left that sat there with these bingo signs, and everyone is tearing them up for these ridiculous protests. Well, the whole thing was obviously scripted. Trump had a great speech laid out. There really wasn't much controversial unless you're a Democrat or unless you're a socialist and you hate America. Everything he said,
you just hate Trump so bad,
right?
Like you just hate him so much.
Yeah, absolutely. So the whole thing seems scripted to me. I mean, you had like, we were talking before about how it seemed like it was like divided into quarters. As soon as Trump came out, there was like people on cue that stood up and walked out, a couple. And then it was like in the second quarter, another group stood up and they had this coordinated, like some of them were wearing pink outfits. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. And they were holding these round signs, like I know I say bingo cards. It kind of reminds me of like silent auction.
Yeah.
Stephen Colbert actually played or dogged on them pretty bad. He was like, I couldn't tell if you were protesting or you were bidding on an antique purse or something. And these signs were these black circles with white letters that said things like Elon steals or something like that. Dude, can you imagine the audacity to be a government agency that just got caught red-handed stealing billions of dollars from the American people and then holding a sign that says the guy who outed us is stealing from you? It's like, dude, how delusional are you? And here's the craziest part. They're so out of touch with the American people. I don't even know like if they're going to recover from this. The majority, recent polls now say the majority of America, like by far, it was like 78% of Americans supported everything Trump said in the speech and like what he's doing. So you have this 20 some odd percent of the population that's hardcore anti-American, really. And they're just so upset. And you have two categories. You have the Democrats who have profiteered off the American people. They've made hundreds of millions of dollars off U.S. tax, off playing on people's heartstrings and emotions. And then you have that bottom level of the population that actually believed all the ridiculous nonsense that the left had said about America, our country, about Trump, et cetera, fill in the blank, right? And between those two, you know, Stalin called them useful idiots.
Yeah.
I would pause and say, I think this is a good point to remind us that if you're in that category, right, where you feel like you've been deceived or you're just looking at this current administration in bewilderment, I would say, come on over. Like you are welcome to pick up the facts and get on the right side of history.
The water's just fine.
Anytime, you know, like come on over. And we're all about people pivoting. If you have a perspective that's incorrect, then change. You might want to start thinking or realizing that everything the left lobbied as an attack against Trump, against Americans, against Christians, big time in this country, everything they said was an absolute lie. They lied about everything, character, motives, objectives, this country. And really, it's funny to say, but like Doge has been a big part of exposing this, that all of these emotional games they played with the American public was all about making money. It's really disgusting, you know? And we're not the only ones saying that now just because, you know, we've never agreed with the left. I mean, Democrats in mass are now kind of realizing like, hey, we got a problem. You mentioned Stephen, what's his last name? He was on The View this week.
Yeah, Stephen A. Smith. I was going to talk about that real quick because...
Yeah, go ahead, because that's a great example.
Stephen A. Smith, for everybody that knows, is a very, he's got a lot of hot takes. He's from ESPN. I think his background is mostly
sports,
in basketball, but sports in general. He's got a weekly show or a daily show. Anyways, he goes on The View and they kind of like wanted him to continue like holding that the left's like banner of like disgust for Trump. And he was like, wait a second, Trump does have a mandate, which was Al Green's argument, you know, you don't have a mandate. No, the American people did give Trump a mandate. His argument was that Trump's victory is exactly that, a mandate from the American people. It's not a fluke. And his perspective really is that the win was less about Trump's popularity as a person and more about the Democratic Party's failures.
Yep.
Voters rejected the Democratic agenda. Not necessarily, they're not necessarily endorsing Trump as Donald J. Trump, the person. But the Democratic Party had a lot of shortcomings. They alienated the working class American by focusing too much on the woke culture and identity politics. Their messaging was too focused on social issues that impacted a small minority rather than a broad economic and security concern. And key voter concerns like inflation, crime, immigration, economic stability, they failed to address. You had Kamala Harris, who was running for president, basically saying, I'm going to do the same thing Joe did. Well, guess what? American people weren't happy with Joe. Dude. So Trump's appeal was perceived as much more relatable and closer to normal than any left-leaning politician. His messaging did resonate with the working class and minority voters, and they shifted traditional Democratic strongholds. One thing that Stephen A. Smith talked about, which I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, was the amount of young black men that voted for Trump. And he was talking about that as a black man.
Yep.
He said Trump was able to appeal to the young black voter. Trump capitalized on the frustration with the economy, crime, illegal immigration. So really, I'm just going to tie a bow on that and then we can keep going. The Democratic strategy moving forward, and I think we saw this even with Gavin Newsom's recent interview with Charlie Kirk, they need to have a huge reassessment of their priorities and really reconnect with its traditional voter base. Now, I hope they don't, because I would like them to continue losing, but I think there's enough people on the Democratic side that want to make money in consulting and everything else that they're going to reassess their priorities. But they've got, if they're going to win elections moving forward, and this is true for Republicans to remember too, you have to focus on the kitchen table issues, right? That's like a age-old phrase in political consulting. What do people care about? If you sit down with somebody at their kitchen table, what do they care about? Yeah. They don't care about DEI or making sure that men can swim at, you know, female competitions. What they care about are their jobs, their wages, crime, border security.
Well, especially if you're starving too.
Exactly.
You know, like, these issues, they don't have a handle on these issues. So one of the problems is the Democrats have to stop gaslighting Americans.
Yeah.
You know, their whole message can be summed up by saying that, you know, they think that you're a bad person if you stop buying steaks for your neighbor when your own family is starving.
Yeah.
And that's just gaslighting, because you're like, we would love to be able to give steaks to everyone in the neighborhood, but you have to maintain a strong home first. If your own finances and your own business and your own family are in disarray, how can you go out there and be the savior of the world? Yeah. So they've clowered pivoned us, like we've talked about before, where they've purposefully dismantled the U.S. culture and our way of life, constantly attacking it, calling Americans racist, calling Christians bigots. The list goes on and on and on and on. And then they gaslight you by saying, well, why aren't you helping the rest of the world? And really, the irony is that all the while, the leaders of those on the left are just profiteering. They're just making millions of dollars. And you see, they're not even trying to hide that. Trump brings a guy like Elon in to go through accountability and find all these waste, fraud, and abuse, and they're mad about it. How does that make you look to the American people?
Well, and I would say, too, to any Democrat or left-leaning liberal out there who has sort of a bleeding heart, for a lack of a better term, about homelessness and starving children in America, don't you think that with all of the money that we sent abroad that has been mismanaged, lost, I mean, this is a small example, but $1 million to fund alpacas in Peru.
Jeez, dude.
If that money was appropriately spent in America, right? Because there's plenty of money to go around. You can do both. It's not right. If or. It's both if the money's managed correctly. You could take care of homelessness in America while also still being secure. But guess what? Maybe we don't fund alpacas in Peru, because personally, I could care less about alpacas in Peru.
And that's probably on one of the better things that they were funding. I mean, really.
Oh, yeah, seriously.
You're talking about millions of dollars spent on studying transgender mice. That's how stupid they got with the waste, fraud, and abuse. Or, like we mentioned before, hundreds of millions of dollars going to empty warehouses. That's just criminal. That's theft.
That's called shell organizations. They're illegal.
And the Democrats, though, are openly and publicly defending that. I just don't think the American people are buying it. Even David Axelrod, who's one of the top Democratic operatives, he called out Al Green. So let's clarify real quick. If you didn't see it, Democrat Al Green was kicked out of the speech because he refused to maintain order and decorum. He stood up in the middle of the speech and started yelling at Trump about a mandate. Now, like we've said, Trump's whole thing is, I've been given a mandate by the American people to go and do this. He's doing the people's will. And so this guy stands up, starts waving his cane and saying, you have no mandate. Like I don't know where his mind is at. But he gets kicked out because he refuses to maintain any order in the House. And then he gets censored by his own Democrats. And you have David Axelrod, who's a top Democratic operative, calling Al Green's outburst, and I quote, despicable. He said pretty much everyone else is dismissing the party's rinky-dink sign displays and protest as, quote, lame. So, again, I think the Democrats are stuck because I think those with it, like leadership ability are realizing that, hey, we've done something wrong. You're starting to see that at the top, more strategic level. The problem they have, and this is a big problem, is they just spent the last decade indoctrinating these followers, and now they're going to have to turn around and say, guys, we lied to you because we were trying to win elections and make money. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the bottom of the barrel level leftists, right? Like your Ocasio-Cortez, me talking about completely delusional. These people that convinced you that the most important thing should be like removing the genitals of 12-year-old boys. And if you don't agree with that, then you're somehow an evil, hateful person. I mean, they have to deal with that ugly, you know, child that they birthed through all of this anti-American propaganda and indoctrination. So the top is starting to realize, oh man, we messed up. Now we have to correct this somehow, because flat out, they said things that just weren't true. They lied to the American people. But unfortunately, there's a huge portion of the population that took them at their word. And they were like, yeah, I guess we are hateful bigots and everyone's racist. And we got to, you know, trans this, and we got to change this and DEI this, and all these things that were purposefully meant to dismantle the United States. And as we've discussed before here on the show, a lot of this was driven by America's opponents, the Chinese Communist Party and their deep involvement with the Biden administration and many others. So now they're going to have to deal with this. I think the speech overall was great. It really highlighted, I think just an amazing amount of stuff that this administration has gotten done in the first, sort of phase of its existence. He talked about tariffs on Canada and Mexico, cutting wasteful spending, the CHIPS Act repeal. Did you know that he just, announced that Taiwanese chip manufacturing company, I forget the name, TSCM or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
They're doing like $100 billion deal to manufacture chips here in the United States now. I mean, dude, he is just hitting home runs left and right. And the only thing the Democrats have said is like, that he's like still like, it's Russia collusion somehow. It's like, it's the most ridiculous things.
Yeah. Well, I will say another interesting point that he had made is he mentioned his reform of the DOJ in his speech, and that they were going to basically revamp their approach so you can't prosecute your political opponents. And in one of his off-scripted sort of funnier moments, I thought, he looks at the Democrats and says, how well did that work out for you anyways? I think that was a fear of a lot of voters on the left, was that he was going to turn around and use the same weaponization of the Department of Justice to then prosecute, whomever, Biden. I mean, Biden basically pardoned anybody he could have prosecuted, but that's doesn't seem to be his MO. And again, that kind of plays into their whole, like, he's this evil dictator. Like, if he was a dictator, he would not be reforming the DOJ to prevent exactly what they did to him from happening further. Yeah. If he was a dictator, like what happens in other countries, you've seen videos of Chinese politicians who are in their big assembly get plucked out of the crowd, like, you're done. Like, yeah. Whomever, the military, the National Guard, whomever he could convince would have marched into Congress like stormtroopers and would have started plucking Democrats out of the crowd.
Yeah.
That's not what happened. It's not what is going to happen, because we live in the United States of America.
I can't get over just the money alone that they've exposed all the waste and fraud. Like, how are people still Democrats?
Because
like,
they hate him so much.
My mind. You still have people like, there's racism. It's like,
it really frustrates me. I try not to get too frustrated about it, but you cannot tell me like all of these people who suddenly have this deep hatred for Elon Musk, who was like a liberal hero 2 years ago.
Oh, and over what? Over him exposing all the waste, fraud, and abuse that, that you've been being lied to, that they have stolen U.S. taxpayer dollars to the tune of billions and billions?
Yeah, it's no different than a CEO, a newly elected CEO that's gotten elected or appointed to by the board, coming into a company and being like, you know, guess what, Google employees, we're not going to have massages anymore, and there's no more latte carts. Like, all he is doing is kind of resetting the expectation, because moving forward, there's been a lot of fluff. And we're not going to allow that anymore. He has a mandate from the American people to do exactly what he's doing. He's coming in. He's cleaning house. He's appointing, you know, all of these people who are saying, you know, Elon Musk wasn't voted in. No, he wasn't. But Trump was. And Trump has picked him to lead this charge.
I don't get that argument anyways. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? We didn't vote the people that working at the DMV either. They're just employees. I don't even understand what they're insinuating. This all in light of the fact that they've just been caught using the power of unelected bureaucracies to manipulate the American people and steal billions of dollars. So who are you to say anything about anyone in this administration? I mean, the truth is, Trump set the stage for 2025 and beyond. And I think at this point, it's up to us to hold on to it, right? It's like a republic if you can keep it.
Yep.
That has never been more applicable than today. I mean, we have this. I will say one takeaway I got from watching the speech and the Democrats' reaction is that the vitriol and hatred for America, because Trump will come and go. The ideals that we're all holding on to don't have anything to do with Trump personally. He happens to be the guy leading the charge right now because he was elected and he's doing a great job. But it's not the man that we follow. It's the country. It's the republic. And it's the Christian Judaic values that make us who we are. So this fight, was my takeaway from the speech, is far from over. I mean, I think that Trump set the stage with bold policies, unapologetic vision, clear calls to action. The only question is, are Americans going to choose strength and prosperity, or are they going to fall further into deception and decline? Like, that's your two options right now. The media wants you to believe Trump's speech was divisive. The left media does. But that's because the truth is dangerous to those who build their power on lies.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that all the time, right? It's like, yeah, the truth is really offensive if you have built your entire power structure on a lie. And that's kind of what I saw at the speech with their little bingo cards and protesting. All they could say was, you know, you're a liar. It's like the dying gasp of the enemy. They're trying to still propagate that they're this somehow like virtue signaling high horse. Like, when you just got caught red-handed stealing billions of dollars from the American people and utterly wasting our time, our influence, our power around the world. I mean, what the Democrats did to this country over the last decade was so utterly destructful. I think that we have to keep our focus on the truth. We have to expose dishonesty wherever it's at. You know, obviously it's heavy on the left's side, and we have to get unfiltered, fact-driven decision makers into office. That's extremely important. So I'm excited because I'm just glad to be. I mean, it was so entertaining. If anything, if you haven't watched the speech, you should go back and listen to it. It was pretty fun. Even my kids sat down to watch it with me.
Yeah.
And we were clapping at numerous points during the speech. It was fantastic. Anyways. Well, I guess that's pretty much it for today. I think we definitely need to hold on to what we have, this momentum, because this fight is far from over. You know, recently we've been talking a lot about visions and goals here at Defining Truth, and we're hoping this year to do some big stuff. You guys stay tuned for that. But it really is time. You know, we're talking about hosting this potential conference called Raising Giant Slayers, and I think it's such an appropriate title for what we're going into, because if you are 14, 15 years old right now, the next presidential election will be your first time voting. And so we have just a short 4 years to make sure that we continue to educate and keep facts at the forefront for this generation, because the left is very good at lying, and they stole an entire generation right under our noses, completely changed and dismantled the American culture and way of life. And if we're not careful, they will do that again, or continue to do it, I should say. So now more than ever is the time to get involved and to care. And there's two calls to that. You know, one, as an American citizen, you have a responsibility. You have a civic responsibility. You have the right, I should say, to vote and be involved in elections, because all the people making these decisions come from us. We put them there, yep. Right? We are the kings in America. It's the American people. So there's a right and an obligation as a citizen to be involved and to care about these things before you're complaining about it and it's too late. And then the second mandate, as Christians and believers, we're to love our neighbor as ourselves, to care about what's going on. We've been given the privilege to live in a free country where we actually can be involved in the civic process and we can vote. So why are we not standing more for moral issues and biblical principles and values? Politicians are not pastors, so we should not confuse those two. But you have the ability to stand up for righteousness and for truth and to defend the innocent and stand against evil in many, many ways, then you should be. If your theology is being driven by the world's narrative, then you need to really check yourself. Something is way off. Your worldview should be driven by the Word of God. A biblical worldview is what made this country as free as it is. And the minute we relinquish those issues, moral issues, political issues, when we relinquish them to the world, we're giving something up that is God's domain, not the enemy's. And so I would just encourage you, if you're listening, to stay tuned and really start to explore and ask yourself, how can we get more involved, and how can we make sure that the next generation is empowered to lead this country into the future? Anyways, guys, check us out on YouTube. You can watch the whole video there, and follow us on Instagram at Defining Truth and news updates on X. And check us out on the Real Life Network too. You can watch all the episodes as they're released on there. Stay tuned and check out definingtruth.org. You can read a little bit more about who we are, what we do. Maybe pick up a copy of our book, Defining Truth, Articulating America's Worldview. We'll see you on the next time.